Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite video games. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Ross. How are you doing today, Matt?
Our entire family was destroyed by this evil king.
Okay, that is a thing that has happened.
if you haven't seen, there's a Silent Live skit where they're doing a medieval times tournament, but one of the people is played by Kylo Ren himself, and he comes in and he's apparently been to acting class, so he's doing it method, and it's really funny. I'm sorry, he starts yelling about how the king burned his village and his soldiers killed his wife, and the guy's like, that didn't happen. I don't know, I laughed.
That's quite all right, but we're not here to talk about those types of skits. No, we are here to talk about, well, this week we have a very specific topic that we're going to start with, but we do have some questions that we might or might not get to. We're going to see how things go, possibly, maybe. But over the past week, we got a brand new cinematic, one specifically aimed at everybody's favorite or least favorite character, Sylvanas, in the new 9.2 patch. Matt, I'm assuming that you've watched it several times.
I watched it like three times.
Yeah. Do you? Before we get into it, I just want to let everybody know that there are going to be probably some very heavy spoilers. So if you're avoiding the cinematic, avoiding discussion of the cinematic or anything therein, now is going to be your time to sort of check back later. I understand.
I just can't believe she was a horse in a costume this whole time.
I thought she was three kobolds. Wait, we watched a different video. Huh. But all that said, I apologize, but it is sort of the topic of the day, so we're going to be going with it. So, do you want to break down what kind of happened in there, Matt, or do you want me to?
I guess I can.
We can trade off back and forth, so why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, well, see, Sylvanas is, when it cuts in, she's unconscious. The scenes comes in with Sylvanas is unconscious, Uther is standing over her, basically looking at the wound on her chest, while the chorus of Bane, I want to say Darian, but it's not Darian, it's, Bolvar.
Bolvar.
Bane, Bolvar, Thrall, and Jaina are all there, and, you know, Uther is like, until the thing inside of her is resolved, she will not awaken. And Bane says to me, what is basically just me, suddenly I am Bane, we are the same person. He's like, maybe it would be better if she didn't. And, Bolvar comes in with pragmatism, is like, look, we need to know what she knows, and we're not going to find out if she just lays there, so get with the waking her up. Both Jaina and Thrall are on the, she the one who did this horrible thing to Anduin, we shouldn't trust her to help him. And Uther is like, look, this is pointless. Her inner divide is so so much stronger than mine was, so much worse that she can't resolve it. And he like takes off his armor plate and takes her hand and puts it on the wound that he got from Frostmourne, sorry. And he's transported inside of her. Like he gets like his mind and hers link, and he's seeing her two sides literally arguing with each other. One thing I think a few people have pointed out online, and I think it's a really good thing to keep in mind here, because people are going to say this, it is not her good side and her evil side arguing.
It's her.
Okay. It's just the part of her that wasn't here when she did all this. Imagine if you lived your life up to a certain point. Like you say you lived your life up till you were 22.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into a coma and you wake up and you have no memory of anything that happened after you age 22, but you kept doing stuff. Like,
yep.
Say you got hit in the head and when you wake out of the coma, your memory has not included anything after age 22, even though you're now 40. And so that's what's basically happening here, except that the situation isn't just that someone lived a life. It's that someone did things that would have completely horrified them before they did them. Where we are.
Yeah, the other thing to really keep in mind, though, too, is they also demonstrated this during the Uther, like, fusing his soul back together. He kind of explained it in terms of it's like a part of you being in stasis, where, like, you are essentially, like Matt pointed out, learning what the other part of you did. It's still you. It's still all part of you. You're learning again.
Yeah, this is stuff that this part of Sylvanas had no memory of, did not know had happened, and is now, since she's been reintegrated, is now having to face it. It's not somebody else's actions. It's just actions she doesn't remember. In a way, this fragment of her isn't culpable of what she did when she didn't have it, but she's still culpable because the rest of her is still there. It's not the same thing as, you know, my good side, my bad side. One side was able to continue acting and one part was not. And that obviously affected how she made decisions. That's impossible. Everybody, Uther was affected by it. He made decisions he otherwise wouldn't have made.
Remember,
this is a fact. But you can't just hand wave that away and say, therefore, the rest of her isn't culpable. She's still culpable for her actions.
Yeah,
but regardless,
it's still her making it, yeah.
Yeah, I want to move past that for a second, because what's really interesting in this moment isn't trying to shift blame or anything. It's the deliberate callbacks to stuff that happened previously.
Mm-hmm.
When you see Sylvanas' two sides, one of them is standing, the one that is the Banshee Queen, the one that we're familiar with, is standing over a kneeling Ranger General Sylvanas. And if you remember the Harbingers, was it the Harbingers shorts?
Harbinger shorts.
Warbringers.
Warbringers.
You remember the Warbringers shorts? The Sylvanas Warbringers has the exact same situation, except she's standing over a Night Elf who's saying, you know, you can't kill Hope. And she's like, can't I? It's that exact thing again. It's, if you've ever seen the pictures from when Sylvanas has set Tel Drassil ablaze and there's the person kneeling at her side, it's the same pose.
Mm-hmm.
So this time, instead of it being an outsider, it's literally Sylvanas doing this to Sylvanas. It is her witnessing her own actions and being utterly horrified by them, and to the point where she can't accept them.
Like, not only not accept them, but declaring them unforgivable.
Yeah. But that comes later. That's when Uther, you know, brings her to, I can't tell where they go. I think it's actually, it looks like the Caverns of Time, Hillsborad.
I don't know if
it's supposed to be. It looked like it was, but I mean, it could have been lots of places. It is a farm. I'll say that for it. And they have a conversation. I think you should take over on the conversation.
So part of the conversation that they have is essentially her declaring that this is awful. This is a wound that cannot heal. This is a fragmentation that can never be accepted. And then Uther sort of appears, and he, after declaring himself, he says, well met, Ranger General. And they're sort of in they're in Anderol, right? They're in Uther's memory. Uther is in his mortal form. He's in his paladin form. He's wearing his armor. He's in all the regalia of the Alliance, something that would be recognizable to the Ranger General, because at that time, even back then, she would know who the Alliance was, but she doesn't know him. And so he says, when she asks, "Who are you?" he says, "Someone who shared your fate, felled by the blade of the very same prince." And then she recognizes that and says, "Arthas." And then they have a conversation, right? Sylvanas declares that she died trying to stop the monster, only to wake up haunted with her, by one with her own face. And then Uther drops the bomb on her and says, "That banshee, that monster is you." And this is something that you can see the expression on her face, is that she cannot accept it. She doesn't want to accept it. She can't reconcile that. That's, these are things that she did. And then Uther basically flat out tells her, her path began where yours ended, and you've seen the decision she's made. And Sylvanas still can't, you know, say, okay, fine, this is me. I understand. I did this, and this is me. And then she says the one thing that I think we were all sort of expecting is, in that moment of defiance, she says, "You cannot possibly understand." And Uther just gives the biggest dad sigh that I've ever heard of a character give. It's like, yeah, I actually can. The two have sort of this conversation back and forth where it's him trying to get through to her and say, yes, these are things you did. Your fragment was halted. He shows her his fragment of soul and reminds her that the jailer's expectation is exactly what she's going through, that the wound in Sylvanas' soul can never heal because this fragment will refuse to accept that it can ever be a part of her, thus leaving her totally fractured and in a position where she can be lied to, controlled, manipulated, or just continue to make very terrible choices. Do you want to jump in?
I mean, the whole thing is about the reconciliation of, I don't know how to put this, trauma. In a way, that the metafiction here, the thematic underpinning is the concept of trauma and what trauma does to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't excuse actions. That's not what's being given here. This is not a get out of jail free card. This is not, see, it wasn't really her fault. It's literally saying, yeah, it's your fault, but you know, this horrible thing happens to you and you're torn apart. And you've heard that a million times in real life, in real situations. This is just making it, it's making it a subtextual thing as part of the story. Sylvanas went through traumas that none of us really can understand, not even Uther. He has an understanding of what it is, but not the depth of it.
He didn't get to live to make the same terrible choices she did and have the consequences, yeah. Right?
Like, he had one terrible choice he made after his fragmentation had happened while he was already dead. And he did that with, you know, he was led to do that by somebody else. Whereas she had years of acting, but based on her trauma, based on the injury she had suffered, the thing that the utter violation that Arthas did to her, not just the killing her with Frostmourne, but what he did to her after, forcing her into an unlife where she was tormented constantly and could find no, you know, she was a banshee slave for a while. Then she managed to find her body and reintegrate into it. But that just made it worse because her body was dead and none of the stuff she felt before she could feel now. And this whole time, a part of her was hidden away. She couldn't access it and it couldn't access her. And that's, if you've ever had real significant trauma, I mean, I don't want to turn this into a Matt Rossi psychology episode, but I've been in the place where you just can't feel certain things. And it doesn't change the fact that what I did was what I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't take away my responsibility because I was, you know, by this pain altered.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we're getting to here. That's the entire point of this conversation between these two characters, is him saying, look, I've been there. I've done things that I wish I hadn't done, that I wouldn't have done, but I did them. And you can't get away from it. You have to turn. He wants you to deny that this is you. He wants you, the jailer is the he in this. He wants you to do that.
He wants you to stay fractured.
Yeah, because as long as you are, as long as you can't turn and face your life, your actions, your the consequences of them, then you will be unable to tell us what he's after, and he'll win. You know, it doesn't. You know, when you said, and she, you pointed out, she says that her crimes were unforgivable, and she says it, her, my crimes are unforgivable.
Yeah, she turns over,
and when he's when she says that, he goes, yes. And you may never be forgiven, but you can make it, you can at least take action now. That's the least you can do, is you can do this. You can face what you've done. And after that conversation between the two of them, he comes out of it and says, look, I did what I can. And after a while, she opens her eyes. And that's the end of the cinematic. So what we've got here, I don't know how to explain it to people because I've seen a lot of reactions to it. When she opens her eyes, they're blue.
Yes.
Indicating that the Ranger General is now integrated into her, that that's a part of her. I've seen a lot of reactions to this. The one I really want to address is, I don't care if you like this or if you hate it. Like right now, that's totally your choice. It's your decision to make on how you feel about something.
Mm-hmm.
But this entire storyline, I've been seeing something happen over and over again, and I'm going to just call it out here. People have a real hard time understanding that you disliking something or me disliking something does not make it bad. It is not that simple. You can actually enjoy things that are awful. You can go and you can watch something and think, wow, this was really fun. I really enjoyed it. And it's objectively a terribly made, poorly executed, poorly thought out thing. But you liked it for whatever reason. That can happen. And the inverse is also true. You can come upon a piece of art, and in this case, this cinematic, and much of the storytelling in the past couple of expansions mm-hmm. has been superlative, but it isn't what you wanted for whatever reason. And that means that people are judging it based on their visceral reaction to what it gives them. And that is a part of art. That is a part of art, is understanding that. And yes, if you have a negative reaction to something, that's valid, but you have to stop and think about why you had it. And that's really important here, because we are getting to a real nexus point in this story. It's time to really let the story tell you where it's going.
I think one of the thing on the same line, and this is something I talked about before, and we've talked about earlier, and I've talked about it on other podcasts as well. There's this in particular, and the character of Sylvanas and her storytelling and the action she's making has elicited a very visceral emotional response from players, both for and against her. Matt and I have both encountered individuals that refuse to see anything other than that she needs to die, no matter what the story tells them, because that's the only thing that will make them happy. And so they ignore the greater strokes of the story. They ignore the nuance, or they sort of pick and choose what they acknowledge. It is really one of those things where, especially with this cinematic, you need to sit there and actually pay attention to the dialogue and, in particular, the animation. There's a lot of things we talk about with visual storytelling, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit here as well before we go on to further analysis. Over the course of the year, Sylvanas as a character model has changed. When she was originally in Undercity, she was in her Ranger General body, wearing her Ranger General armor. Exposed skin, very little armor for quick mobility, still wearing the feathers and keeping them polished, with her bow and her quiver on her back. As time progressed and we got to a more paranoid version of her, I believe it was Cataclysm, might have been Legion, she got a character model update. That character model update
moved. She got one in Cataclysm and another.
Yes. Legion. So the one in Legion was more heavily armored, and it was much more angular, much more metallic, much more even the feathers were dying. They're starting to decay. She was wearing more chainmail. She was wearing more metal plates, and she was looking as like a darker, more sinister person in that regard. Less of the Ranger General, more of the Banshee. Then comes to this expansion when we see her, and she basically is wearing jailer armor. She's wearing armor like everything that exists on Torghast. And then to see that juxtaposed in the exchange between the two of them, where she's in sort of that in-between state as her Banshee burning the tree, And then looking at her dealing with herself in the Ranger General armor, same mannerisms, same facial expressions, but much different people. The other thing I'd like to call out is that the Uther and Ranger General Sylvanas that are discussing their interactions when they're in Andoral, it looks like Warcraft 3. It looks like a slice of time. The animation is different. Even when Ranger General Sylvanas and the Banshee Queen Sylvanas are talking to each other, the Banshee Queen is in the current animation. The Ranger General is stuck in that slice of time, sort of to drive it home. There's a lot of very subtle storytelling in the visual. And I think that's important because I think it starts to inform some of how this starts to progress. And that's part of that nuance. And it's part of that character development and that character arc. And I think the other thing, now moving back to where we get to the end of it and she opens her eyes, the important thing to note for me, and that I've been reminding a lot of people, is this is not redemption. This is not the same thing. This is not her magically being absolved of everything. Uther succumbed to the same type of temptations that were presented to Sylvanas, just on a smaller scale. He's still not mustache twirling evil. He's complicated. He condemned a soul, something he would never have done in his right mind, directly to the Maw, which may have been the soul that was used to enslave Anduin. He may be responsible for that in part. That he doesn't say, I didn't do this. He doesn't say, I need forgiveness for this. Even when he comes back to the Kyrian and he goes to Carestria and he presents himself, it's not, I'm sorry. It's not, I want to make everything right because I was in my right mind. It's no, I did this. I need to reflect. I need to figure out what my new place is. I need to figure out how I move forward, how I progress. Sylvanas is a character that for a long time has just been stuck in that shard of damnation, in even her own body in life. She's been stuck. She's been in stasis. She's been fighting a battle that nobody else can possibly understand. She's been alone, and she's been essentially fighting as if she was still under the domination of the Lich King. That fear has driven her to make terrible choices. And instead of saying, this wasn't me, at the end of this, she goes, okay, these are my crimes. I did this. I need to move forward. She acknowledging that she can't be forgiven or that she shouldn't be forgiven, I think is kind of a big deal. And I think a lot of people are missing that. She's not looking for forgiveness, but she can look to do something positive. She can look to take everything that she's done, everything she's learned, and everything she's seen, and be something closer to who she wants to be, as opposed to what everybody else wants her to be. It's an important moment. It's an important point in her particular story. And I think Matt's right. If you're not getting exactly what you want, it's very easy to declare it bad, or, you know, because you're getting exactly what you want, declare it good, or to try to put the pieces in a different order. Just take it for what it is and let the story take you where it needs to go. Let it tell you what it wants to tell you.
Now, that being said, that does not mean you are wrong to correct. Feel however you feel. And for that matter, there is a point where you do get to sit back and judge it. And mm-hmm. that time is when it is completed telling you what it's doing. When we get to the end of this, then you can judge it. And, you know, you may not like it, and that's fine. And you may not like it for perfectly good reasons that you can sit down and list out. And, you know, we'll do that. I will be doing that. We all will. Whatever our ultimate conclusion on what this story has meant and how we feel about it, we will talk about it. Trust me that, you know, you just heard him go for like 10 minutes. We're going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be upfront. I am one of those people who want Sylvanas to die or go away. That's how I feel. I am done with this, with Sylvanas. I want there to not be any more Sylvanas for a while. I don't care how we get there. I don't care if we kill her in patch 9.2. I don't care if she willingly goes to the Maw forever. Whatever it takes. And it's not because this hasn't been really good acting, because it's been amazing, especially the cinematic. Patty Matson puts on a freaking class.
Mm-hmm.
It's like astonishing to watch this. It's like watching somebody. I mean, there's a little reverb on dead Sylvanas' voice, but make no mistake, Patty Matson comes along and just absolutely wrecks it. She does an amazing job portraying the what it would be like to wake up and know what you've done and see all of this. You know, it is astonishing. I don't know who the actor who does Uther is, but he does a really good job here too.
Yeah, I actually keep going. I know.
Go ahead,
name.
Go look him up. Yeah. He does a really good job too. I even like, there's like little bits from everybody else. They don't get to do a lot. Like Jaina and Thrall and Bane don't get a lot of time. Neither does Bolvar. But I like pretty much what every single one of them did.
Yeah.
In that time.
It's Michael McConaughey.
Okay, yeah.
Who was also the voice of Kel'Thuzad.
Yeah, and didn't he take Kel'Thuzad, like, and then they switched it to somebody else because he was doing Uther, or am I, no?
No, I think he just did, he did all of it, I think.
But, yeah, regardless, does an amazing job here. One of my favorite bits, though, is just Bane and Bolvar.
Yeah.
Because Bane comes in and says what literally most people, I think, are thinking. Or at least what a lot of people are thinking, that whole... Maybe it would be better if she didn't wake up.
It's a completely reasonable reaction. Think of what he went through at her because of her.
Yeah, and not just him, everybody.
Yeah,
like everyone in that room, everybody, like, they know. You know, he's actually, I wouldn't say he's friends with Anduin, but I would say they have a mutual respect, and they've been towards each other in such a way that a friendship could happen if they weren't on opposite sides of the Horde Alliance divide. There's been a respect and there's some admiration, and they've treated each other like people that could become friends. And he's seeing what's happened to Anduin and knows what she almost did to him and knows what she did to Jaina's brother, because he's the one that stopped it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when he says maybe it would be better if she doesn't wake up, he is saying something that you would not be surprised to hear someone say. And he does it very well, because it's a very dry delivery. It's just, maybe she didn't wake. And then Bolvar comes in. No, let me go here, man.
Okay.
Bolvar comes in, and he just delivers, you know, it's like he doesn't contradict him at all. He doesn't say, no, it'd be good if she won't. He just goes, it doesn't matter. We need her. And it's great, because it is such a, Bolvar is such the pragmatist that we've always said he was. Because while he was a paladin and he was a noble person, he was a general who fought multiple wars. And he knows to win a war, you have to do things that you don't want to do. And this is one of those times. It's just really great. I mean, Thrall and Jaina's reactions are spot on. And, you know, Laura Bailey could just show up and say, you know, I'd like to have a pizza and leave. And it would be amazing. But she does a good job with Jaina, because she gets the outrage across really fast. And Thrall is just Metzen. I mean, it's Thrall.
It's not Metzen anymore.
Oh, it's not? Because it sounded just like him. So good job, whoever's doing it.
Yeah, the current voice actor for Thrall, it was shifted. It hasn't been Metzen for this entire expansion, because he's been doing other things. But whoever, I don't remember the name of the person that is doing it, but he's been doing a phenomenal job. All I wanted to jump in earlier and say is that the amount of emotion conveyed in that scene in such a small amount of time is not only a credit to the writers in framing that scene and the director getting that scene set up the way it is, because there's a lot in the looks too. There's a lot in the animation that's presented. There's a lot in, and again, that environmental storytelling, but then those voice actors, every single one of them is just zeroed in. They are dialed in perfectly to that moment. And Bane is the, like Matt's pointing out, is probably the perfect example, just because it's such a small line, but it's so impactful. And then you see the look on his face as he says it. And it's just like, yeah, okay, I'm here for it. It's phenomenal how much this cinematic is probably one of the most emotionally filled ones. And I don't mean like it's going to make you cry or anything like that. I mean, just the level of emotional gymnastics that are being done between the characters and giving themselves their presentation and giving themselves their arc. Particularly like we were saying, that conversation between Patty Matheson and Michael Conahay. It's just phenomenal. Like, I could listen to those two go back and forth, because it is sort of this wizened elderly voice and this person who is horrified and terrified. And that, I think, is also important, because it's a scary thing to be trapped and see that, and then see what you became. And so not just be mad at it, but to be scared of it as well. And to give both emotions the same space so easily with just your voice. Phenomenal. Like, just absolutely phenomenal. And I have been corrected. It appears it is actually Chris Metzen that is doing the voice of Thrall. So that does explain at least why I sound so much like Chris Metzen, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, continued thoughts. Like, let's move on to our own personal thoughts about this cinematic and where it is. Matt, like you said, you've watched it a few times. What stood out to you the absolute most?
Well, like I already mentioned, the acting, and I think the acting here is phenomenal. It is very good. You talked a little bit about the little visual storytelling stuff. Like the way that Sylvanas as the Ranger General looks like softer and more muted, more like her Warcraft 3 model. I mean, better, but still, she looks more like her Warcraft 3 model. Mm-hmm. Uther looks more like his Warcraft 3 model when you see him as the Paladin Uther. There's also stuff like I mentioned up front about the whole restaging, about how it is Sylvanas standing in front of Tel'Drassil again.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stuff I have some suspicions that I am leery to talk about because I have absolutely no evidence for them. But
I'm going to poke you to do it anyway because I think that's what people come here to listen for.
Well, here's the thing. The person who was mostly presenting us with what was going to happen in Battle for Azeroth at the time was a man named Alex Afrasiabi, who I'm pretty sure was the person who came up with the idea that things should unfold the way they did. And he talked about it a lot, and he defended it quite a bit. Alex Afrasiabi clearly does not work at Blizzard anymore, and you guys know why. Without me derailing too hard, we don't have any. I can't prove anything. If I say he did something, that's not provable. But it seems pretty clear that the removal of his name from the game implies that he is involved in the current situation Blizzard is going. Well, that's vague. Sorry, but I really can't. I can't say he did something I can't prove.
Yeah, we got it. We all know what's going on in the current state of things, but
yeah,
but not to dwell.
This means that for the past two expansions, other people have had to pick up the idea he came up with and make it work. And while I think the storytelling in Battle for Azeroth is some of the best World of Warcraft has ever had, and I'll keep saying that because people don't believe me, I do think. I am one of those people for whom it was a gut punch. It hurt. And people are like, it's just a game. What do you care? But I care about this game. This game has been a big part of my life. This game is, I proposed to my wife playing World of Warcraft. You know what I mean? I mean, yep. I've been in guilds throughout the history of this game. Because of this game, I still have the ability to see somewhat out of my left eye. If I wasn't writing about World of Warcraft, I wouldn't have had enough people in the community to come help me when I started to go blind. World of Warcraft is not just a game to me. And so, whilst I think Battle for Azeroth was extremely well done, it hurt me and I didn't really get over it. And you can mock that if you want to. People have done so. People even in the comments of our site have mocked me for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. The game is important to me. And so, in Shadowlands, while I understand for some people this is kind of like the expansion that's the weirdest and hardest for them to get their head around and all this new stuff and they don't know what's going on and it's gotten, and Sylvanas has been this like darting around figure throughout it and we keep seeing her almost get punished and then not get punished and all that's there and I understand what you're saying and to some degree I share it. Like I was really, really upset she didn't come out of the fight with Tyrande messed up. Like I wanted to see her get hurt, but that's an emotional thing. That's my reaction to the fact that back at the beginning of Battle for Azeroth, the game got changed for me in a way that I really couldn't cope with. What with everything else that was going on in my life and in the world, seeing that happen, it really hurt, and I'm still not over it. But this is the first time that I felt like people who actually understand the severity of that moment are in charge.
Yeah.
Because the reaction... The scene between Sylvanas and Uther, I have been saying since 2007, like whenever I started working on talking about World of Warcraft and other Blizzard games professionally, I have been saying that Sylvanas Windrunner is one of the most interesting characters in the game. And that doesn't mean she's like that I like her as a person. I would want to hang out with her. I think I would have liked her as a person up till the, you know, till she died. Like the person she was before. I mean, I would have been afraid of her because, you know, she was like a stone cold killer, but you know, like all Ranger generals. Mm-hmm. But I think she would have, you know, she had a lot to her personality. The fact that she's the one who stayed when her sister, who was supposed to become Ranger General, took off on a revenge kick, you know? Alaria abandoned them to go off on a revenge rampage. And while that's perfectly understandable, it left Sylvanas holding the bag. Sylvanas was not supposed to become Ranger General. She never anticipated it. She didn't want it, but she took it because somebody had to do it. Who was going to do it? Valeria, who is still relatively a child by their standards? Was she going to, you know, not Valeria, Varisa, sorry. Was she going to leave that to Varisa? No, she couldn't leave it to Varisa. So it had to be her because Alaria effed off. And then from there, she managed to still, like when her sister appeared to have died, she managed to mourn her. She contributed, even after her people had pulled out of the Alliance, she contributed to that statue that they put up of Alaria in Stormwind. She wrote the plaque for it saying, you know, you were the best of us. Imagine saying that about somebody who left you behind to do her job, but she did it because she loved her sister. You know, she had lost her whole family to the Horde, but she still loved her sister. And then everything she went through after, and I'm not going to sit here and list everything Sylvanas went through. Come on. It's just too much. But that's my point. It's too much. Is it any wonder if she'd been completely whole, she would have broke? Like the wound that Frostmourne inflicted on her split off a piece of her. Yes. But had that piece still been there, she still would have broke. Because it was just so much. Maybe she wouldn't have broken the same way. But the whole bit of this cinematic is, it isn't the fragment coming along and saying, you know, I'm Sylvanas now, and all that stuff that one did, that was the bad me. I'm the good me. I won't, you know. No. It's her. It's a piece of her that didn't experience any of it, experiencing it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing, you know, in a way that she couldn't do while she didn't have that piece of her, because she could not stop and look at herself. And now she has been forced to. The jailer figured that being forced to look at herself would destroy her. And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted it to destroy her. And that way he wouldn't even have to deal with it anymore. He didn't even want to have to smear her on the ground in front of him. He wanted her to just be destroyed mentally because he likes torture. He is a terrible person. We'll get into that at some other point, I'm sure. It's this moment, because it isn't, like I said before, it's not a get out of jail free card. It's not even like, you don't understand until you've actually like been to a point where you've suddenly realized what your behavior has actually done to people. You don't know what it is like to come to that realization. And it is destroying. It is agonizing. In a way, a death for Sylvanas that sent her off into like the unknown to be like, you know, recycled into anima for something else, that would be a mercy, because it would be over. She wouldn't have to do any of this anymore. Imagine having lived through all that and now having to realize that it broke you and you turned into something that you would never, ever want to be. That you became just a terrible person, and that you've been a terrible person for years doing awful things. And now you have to face the people you did them to. That is... This cinematic is setting up some interesting stuff. As somebody who, again, and I'm going to say this again, as somebody who did not like the previous story, and I did not like it, that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means I didn't like it. I didn't want it. But having gotten to this point, I feel like it's finally heading in a direction that I can enjoy, that I can look at and say, okay. So yeah, we'll see. I'm sure Joe has lots of stuff to say here. But I also do want to point out that in addition to the visual stuff, in addition to the acting, there's some really good cinematography here.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just some amazing use of darks and lights. There's some really good moments of just sweeping the camera around. I know there's no actual camera, but that's what we call it. The point of view sweeps around in good, interesting ways. It brings to me this real sense of frustration that Blizzard has not been ever taken off the chain and allowed to do like just visual storytelling. I'm going to just sidetrack here and say, I've been watching Arcane, the League of Legends series on Netflix. It is amazing. It is extremely well done. The acting is phenomenal. The cinematography in it is phenomenal. And watching it, I'm more convinced than ever that if the Blizzard cinematic team was just given free rein, they could make something like that.
Agreed. And this cinematic proves that to me.
Oh, yeah. And it's just to watch this, to see them actually deal with the characters, to really dig in on Sylvanas, and to have, you know, Patty Matson come in and supply both voices. She's doing voices for both versions of Sylvanas at the same time.
She's literally arguing with herself.
Yeah, and it is compelling. It is interesting to watch.
And then you combine that with the entire concept. Like, for me, it was this idea of a soul in conflict. This is something we've been talking about forever, right? This is something that we've talked about a lot of times on this show. We've talked about it on the other podcasts as well. It's Sylvanas is a complicated character, and that's always been part of her strength. She's never just been purely a mustache twirling villain. And the cinematic shows not necessarily how she got to where she is, because it doesn't excuse any of it. These are still choices she made, regardless of what influences were there, what deals she cut, or whatever it is. Because we still don't know. There are things we still don't know even after this, right? And I'll get to that in a second. But it's the entire idea that this is a cinematic about a soul in conflict, that is a individual dialogue between two parts of the same person arguing with themselves. And that resonates with me at a very visceral level, where I, not to go too like sideways about it, but as somebody who struggles with things like imposter syndrome and stuff like that, it hit home. It hit home how somebody could be conflicted and questioning their own stuff and not accepting what they're seeing as them, or not accepting what they're seeing as being real. I didn't do that. I couldn't have done that. That's unforgivable. That's terrible. That's the other side of that is I'm not good enough to do good. I'm not good enough to do that amazing thing, right? It's two sides of the very same coin. And it's this internal conflict that we see between Sylvanas and herself with I'll just call it the Ranger General fragment, basically being crushed in horror and devastation, not just at the stuff that she's seen herself do, but still running and trying to get a handle on the fact that this is her, that what she's seen isn't a lie, that this actually happened, right? The scene that did it the most for me is, Matt pointed this out earlier, it's where the Banshee is standing over the Ranger General, and it is not shot for shot the same, but it is framed the same as the Delorean Sylvanas scene, where Delorean is on her knees and Sylvanas is getting into her face, and Delorean saying, "Why? You've already won. Only innocence remain in the tree." And Sylvanas saying, "This is war." Delorean going, "No, this is hatred, rage. Windrunner, you were defender of your people. Do you not remember?" And Sylvanas going, "I remember, a fool." Fast forward to now, and you have the Ranger General kneeling in that same position, eyes with tears, filling with just utter horror and devastation at what she's doing, chest shaking, the pain, the accusation clear as day as how could she do something like this? How could this person who gave up everything, who stepped in when her sister ran away, who flew in the face of authority to make sure that her people were safe, who was betrayed by her own people and that leading to her death, why would she cause that to somebody else? What would take her to that point? How can she reconcile that? And it was such a powerful moment. And even then, like, looking at the exasperation as, like, the Banshee tries to justify herself, right? She tries to argue with the Ranger General, trying to describe a bigger picture that even we, like, not to say that it's not there, but one that we can't see, and one that maybe Sylvanas can't see as clearly as she thinks she can. She makes claims like this was beyond life and death. There was no other path to true freedom. How can you not see that? What true freedom? Even in the last moments, we'll say, because at this point, this has been moments since Sylvanas' soul has been fragment has been shoved back into her body, and this conflict has started. Sylvanas turned on the jailer because she realized that there was no freedom coming. It was everybody was going to be made to serve again. She was lied to. She was fed down this path that she maybe not wouldn't have if she was in her right mind or in a right state or whatever, but she had succumbed to these choices, made those choices, and been led to somewhere, even we see before she gets the fragment back, that she didn't really want to go because there was no greater good. There was no Machiavellian purpose at this point if it's just going to repeat and put her back in all the other people that she damned into servitude again. And it's this battle between them, and especially like Patty Madison screaming at the Banshee, the Ranger General screaming, "I see what you are, murderer, monster, butcher." These are labels she's giving herself. This is part of her process of integration, part of her accepting these are things I did. And Matt's right. If you've ever been through something very traumatic and eventually having to reconcile with things that you did when you couldn't feel or you weren't necessarily 100% home, it's devastating. It can be absolutely devastating. But yet somehow you have to move forward. You have to find a new path. You have to take ownership of the things that you did. And I think that's been part of the reason why Sylvanas has always been a divisive character, is because up until now, and I don't know if you've noticed this, ever since she became the Banshee, it was always somebody else's fault. We are slaves to this torment. We are slaves to this. We are prisoners of our own mortality. We are prisoners of death. We are this is Arthas's fault. This is the Legion's fault. This is Sargeras's fault. This is I'm just throwing names out there. I'm not saying that she says this, but it's always somebody else's fault. Look at Before the Storm. She doesn't want the Desolate Council to do what they're doing, but she allows them to do it anyway. She doesn't want them to do it. For why? Because they'll abandon her, because they'll remind her that she's not who she says she is. And when she murders those beings, the Forsaken, in that field, in the valley, it's not her fault. It's their fault. They made her do it. They left her no choice. That's always how it's been with her. This is the first time since she died that we see her say, "I did this. These are my crimes." And it's starting to sink in that, yeah, this is me. It's nobody else's fault. It's not something that I can explain away. It's not something I can blame somebody else. I ultimately chose to burn that tree. I ultimately chose to murder those people. Even if I was nudged in a direction, it doesn't matter. I still chose. It's nobody else's fault but mine. I could have stopped. I could have not made that choice. And yeah, I think that's big.
It's one of those things when you deal with that kind of situation. This is one of the reasons why I almost wish we could like have a therapist on the show. Like, seriously, I'm not kidding. Because this is one of those... I watch a lot of videos like Therapist Reacts to X. And I'd love to watch a therapist react to Sylvanas. Although, you know, man, all that stuff she'd have, all that research she'd have to do.
I know have at least one therapist that listens to us that is a fan of this game. So if you want to drop us a line with your notes on this, feel free.
But like, seriously, I think if you've ever, we keep talking about this, and again, it doesn't excuse anything. I've even said this to my wife. I've said on a few occasions, you know, like I was a terrible person, and that I would not want her to meet me before a certain point in time. Like, she's always been like, imagine if we'd met when we were younger. And I'm like, no, I'm glad you didn't meet me when I was younger. And it was me. Yes, I had my reasons. Yes, I blamed other people. And I mean, some of that stuff was because other people did things, but that doesn't make what I did not what I did. And that's the thing that I feel like we've actually gotten a sense of here. I totally get people saying that it's not enough. And the thing is, this cinematic is not meant to be the whole story.
It's not absolution.
It's not absolution. We don't even know what's coming next. We know other stuff is going to happen in this patch. We've been told there's going to be a Tyrande Sylvanas something.
There has to be, right? Like, we've been told that there is, but there has to be. This is the other thing that I wanted to talk about too, is like, even though we're here, this is just the beginning of tying up of some of the loose ends. There's so much stuff that we don't know, that we've never been privy to. Like, when we had Steve on the show for the interview, one of the things we talked about and we asked him and he couldn't tell us was, what exactly happened in that conversation between Helya and Sylvanas? We don't know what happened there. We don't know what deals were cut. We don't know what powers were exchanged. We don't know any of that. We don't know any of the journey in the back end. We don't know any of the story of her developing that new plague back in the day and putting all that forward. There's so many things that we don't know yet. And we're going to start finding out more of that. We're going to have those moments of Tyrande and Sylvanas having to have a confrontation because, well, Alun's no longer in Tyrande and the jailer presumably is no longer exerting power through Sylvanas. Maybe, I don't know. But how is that going to reconcile? We still have all those elves that were displaced. How's that going to work? All those souls that are now in Ardenweald that we canonically saved from the Maw and from Torghast of those night elves. How does that work? Does Sylvanas go and apologize to them? Does she face them? What happens there? There are so many loose ends to her story that we can finally start getting. And I think that's really, really important because it's part of that. Matt says something that I hear a lot is I just want her to go away because we've had a lot of her. And we absolutely have. But part of that is getting that closure to move forward, to move away from it so that we don't have to deal with it again. And I'd rather in this next patch start having all this come out. I mean, is she going to have a conversation with Bolvar about all the terrible things that happened there? Is she going to have a conversation with Anduin? Because that's a whole other thing, too. Like, there's just so much here. There's so much that we can finally start getting into and start closing out. And then she can go away for a while, right? Whether it's she dies or she stays back in the Maw or she does something else or whatever, she can go away and we can finally move. We can move forward. We can move forward from, and I hate to say this because I don't know another way to say it. We can finally move forward from Warcraft 3 because I feel like no matter how good the storytelling has been, no matter how big the story has gotten, no matter how much has been revealed, we never really moved away from Warcraft 3. Everything we've been dealing with up to this point has been something that either started there or has gone back there. Almost everything.
Actually, that does bring up something I want to talk about.
Sure.
Though, in that, in a real, very real way, lore in games is often connected to the actual ludic nature of the game, the gameplay aspect.
Mm-hmm.
The decision made in 2004 to go to a hard faction divide between World, the Alliance and the Horde in World of Warcraft meant that they couldn't move from Warcraft 3 because mm-hmm. Warcraft 3 ends the faction conflict. It ends it.
Yep.
It's over. At the end of Warcraft 3, everybody on Azeroth came together and fought for their lives. And, you know, at the end of that, then we even have, we've got the story with Rexxar showing the growing pains of the Horde, like the new settlement they're building, showing Jaina turning away from her father's, you know, her father wouldn't let Warcraft's 1 and 2 go. He wouldn't let it end. And it's not that he wasn't right. Everything he said about what the Horde had done to him was stuff the Horde had done to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was unwilling or unable to accept that the situation had changed and that sometimes you don't get revenge. Sometimes you don't get to make them pay for what they did. So, you know, you want to. You want them to suffer for what they did, but you ever want the suffering to stop, you got to stop it, you know? And that is, that's something that Warcraft itself is aware of, but which we were not allowed to process. And so we keep having, like, that keeps coming back because they won't take the step necessary.
And it feels like they're finally starting to do that.
Like, maybe we'll get there now. Maybe we're finally going to see what Jaina said at mm-hmm. the middle point of Battle for Azeroth. What's different? We are.
There's, you
know, maybe we can get there.
Combine this with, I think it was the interview with Ion Hazzikostas, right? Where he said that maybe it's time to move beyond that. Maybe it's time that we start looking past the faction divide.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing. I apologize because I don't remember the exact statement he made. But that combined with this feels like maybe we are finally getting to that moment. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that the fact that all these years has been informed by the events of Warcraft 3 because we've gotten some amazing stories out of it.
You talked about it specifically when you just said it. got me thinking about the fact that we've talked about stasis here.
We've been in stasis.
It's not just like we talked about how Sylvanas, a part of her, was in stasis, how Uther, a part of him, was in stasis. Everything has been in stasis. Mm-hmm. Warcraft 3, in terms of storytelling, if you really think about it, Warcraft 3 is the wound inflicted by, you know, by Arthas, by the Lich King, by the Scourge. The Scourge is unnatural. It's not supposed to be this way. People aren't supposed to get up and start moving around when they're dead. Undeath isn't supposed to happen. It is the Shadowlands and the power of the Shadowlands, the power of the Maw, infecting our world where it's not supposed to be. There's supposed to be a barrier between them. Things are only supposed to go in certain ways. You know, resurrection isn't supposed to happen like this. There's a cycle of reincarnation. It's supposed to go from the Shadowlands to whatever the life plane is, the Emerald Dream or what have you, and from there into Azeroth. It's not supposed to work this way. It's broken. The machinery of death we keep talking about, the break in it was Warcraft 3. Warcraft 3 was the break. Warcraft 3 is the moment nothing has worked right since. Everything has been messed up since. And that's, this is all narratively speaking. This isn't like literally the game's lore. This is just in terms of the effect on the narrative.
Yeah.
We've been circling Warcraft 3 over and over again. That's why we keep getting Legion invasions, because they keep not moving past. We keep getting caught up. You know, it's very much that narrative thing. Maybe this is what we needed to get past it.
And maybe that started with Legion, and maybe that started with the end of it. Battle for Azeroth kind of brought it back a little bit, but the Titans are gone. The Titans are in their seat. They're not coming back. Old gods are technically, theoretically gone. We don't know that for sure, but you know, that's a whole other thing. The faction, every major character from Warcraft is basically gone or getting ready to be gone. Whether it's Uther Arthas, whether it's Sylvanas, Chen Stormsouth's back on the Isle, retired. Like they're all retired, essentially, or in some manner. And it feels like we've been asking for this for a while, and a lot of people have been asking about it. How do you move forward with a game that's almost two decades old? And it's you give the lore that's already existed a rest and start moving forward with a new story. And I think they can, and I think this might be potentially us finally breaking that stasis, like Matt's pointing out. Maybe we are going to finally move away from Warcraft 3. Maybe we are finally going to move away from that. Maybe we're going to move away from the faction divide and have more complex storytelling. Maybe we'll get that story of the elves breaking away from both factions. Maybe we'll get something more in depth, and maybe this is the beginning of it. But with Sylvanas finally, her story finally coming to an end, that really is the last story. Cairn's no longer around. Vol'jin's gone. He'll be a Loam, but we don't know when he's going to come back. But even then, he's not going to be a faction leader. He's not going to be involved heavily in, theoretically, in the day-to-day operation of the world. Varian's gone. Who else is left?
I mean, there's Thrall and Jaina, but Thrall's kind of...
Thrall's retired.
Well, he's sort of in that council thingy, but he doesn't do a lot. And Varian, I mean, not Varian, Jaina... Jaina's in charge of Kul Tiras, but now that we're not in the Kul Tiras expansion anymore, she could drop to go lead her people and we could not see her for an expansion or two and nobody would notice.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, we haven't seen Khadgar since the end of Legion.
Yeah, and I think those are important things to note. And I think it's interesting because for me, and I think just to kind of close it out here, the cinematic represents the start of an end that will ultimately lead to a new beginning. And that's something that I haven't felt in a while. It's almost like the worst analogy I can think of, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's like when you get sick and you get a cold and it just kind of lingers forever and you kind of always feel it. And then one day you finally start feeling the end of it come and you get that sort of clear breathing starts to happen and you're no longer coughing nearly as much. And we're starting to feel like we're getting to the tail end of that. Now, I'm not trying to say that it was bad that what we had. Far from it. It's been some amazing storytelling. It's been some amazing story and gameplay, some fantastic expansions. But I feel like for the first time, the future is wide open. And because we're starting to bring all those stories to an end, even not with this, but we're also going to start getting conversations between Bolvar and his daughter. We're going to have conversations probably after we rescue Anduin, because I mean, that's a foregone conclusion at this point. we're going to have all these moments that are going to start to wind down, that literally anything is possible. It's ripe with potential. So I guess final thoughts, Rossi, anything you want to say?
I mean, probably, but there's probably more than we have time for me to say. I will say that, you know, again, if you don't like what's happening, you have every right not to like it for whatever your reasons are. I mean, there's been times I haven't, but it's really important that you actually look at what they're giving you and make your decisions based on that, not based on what you wanted. I see a lot. People keep making that same mistake. That's why I keep bringing it up. That idea that, you know, if you don't like something, that means it's bad. That is not the case. I don't like Final Fantasy. What is this current one? 14?
14.
Yeah. I've tried it again recently. I actually went and downloaded it and tried it the other day. I don't like it. That doesn't mean it's bad. A lot of you love it. This many happy people, that's got to have something. It just doesn't have something for me. That happens. And that can totally be happening here. And if that's how you feel, that's totally valid. And I'm not kidding here. It doesn't make you wrong. People can like different things. Right about now, I am about as excited for what we're going to see in 9.2 as it's possible. And I've basically checked out until 9.2. 9.2 comes along, I'm going to come back. I'm definitely going to see all that stuff. 9.1 hasn't really done much for me. Corthia hasn't really got my interest like I hoped it would. But I am super down for Xerath Mortis. I am super down for seeing this really weird new alien place. Because it feels like we're finally moving, as Joe said, it feels like we're finally moving past the trap we've been in for the past, you know, it's going to be 2022, 18 years. And that, to me, is interesting. I am looking forward to seeing where we go from here.
Now, that was just us discussing the cinematic and what we think of everything. Hopefully, you can share your thoughts with us. I'd love to hear it. Don't go ahead and send us an email, but go ahead and talk with us on Discord. We have plenty of channels for us to discuss it.
I mean, they can email us, too.
They could. You could email. You know what? Go ahead. Email us your opinions. But just be constructive. And I ask that you don't come in and just start saying we're wrong because she needs to die or whatever. I'm happy to have a conversation with y'all about this. But if you have questions about anything we talked about here, if you have questions about anything else regarding any of those Blizzard games that exist out there, be sure to send us an email into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Specify which show it's for. You can also hit us up on Discord. And I'm going to do something a little bit different here. And I'm going to throw this out there. Warcraft isn't the only franchise that has been around forever. If you have questions about story, about any video game that is story driven, why don't you go ahead and send it our way? Matt and I play a lot of video games. Maybe it's time we too start expanding the horizons of Lorewatch just a little bit. So if that's something
I'll be up front too. If there's a game you want us to talk about that neither of us have played,
we'll play
ask
it.
About it anyway. We'll play it. We'll go research. We will get into that kind of thing. We love doing that kind of stuff. The two of us have had long, long conversations about specifically the Spider-Man video game universe.
Yes.
And I think we have a discussion about whether or not we think the Spider-Man current video game universe is the same universe as the original Treyarch Spider-Man.
Yes, yes, we did.
Yeah, and you told me how it wasn't in all the different ways, and I was like, oh, yeah, you got a point. It can't be the same one.
But you guys didn't get to hear that because that was a conversation Matt and I had in the background because we had
could be a conversation you get to hear. Also, one other thing I do want to say on the subject we've been talking about. If you think I'm wrong about anything I've said, I am totally down with you telling me I'm wrong. This is not a problem. We can have long conversations about it. Just don't call me names. Just don't tell me I'm stupid.
Yeah.
You can tell me I'm wrong. You can tell me you disagree with me. That's great. Just don't call me names. Don't tell me I'm stupid. I can be wrong without being stupid. People come to wrong decisions. Maybe, you know, and for that matter, you can just plain old disagree with me without either of us being wrong. And that's totally cool too. I just want to put that out there because I've been seeing a lot of it lately and not even just aimed at me. In fact, not aimed at me all that much, but aimed at a lot of other people. If somebody says something you disagree with, it doesn't necessarily mean that either of you are wrong. This is art. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is art. Video games are art. I'm not having that argument again. I don't care if Roger Ebert comes back from the dead to tell me I'm wrong. I'm sorry, Roger. I liked you as a movie critic, but video games are art. We are now at the point where not only are they art, they're spawning more art.
And there's art that's spawning additional pieces, right?
Yeah, it's fractal art at this point. So yeah. So I had more to talk about than I thought I did. We should stop me so we can leave because I need food and stuff, and I think Joe does too.
Yeah, so all that to say, go ahead and ask us questions about other video games. And on that same front, I do want to remind you all that Blizzard Watch is made possible only due to the contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to podcasts, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And again, if you want us to grow and continue to evolve, please consider donating to our Patreon. It is really truly what allows us to do this and to do things like Tavern Watch, where we talk about tabletop games, and maybe we can start doing some more stuff with video game lore or other things. But we can only do that if we can keep the lights on. So anything you can give, anything you can do to shout us out, share us with your friends, give us reviews on any of the various places where we're streaming, recommend us on Spotify. We're on Spotify now. Did you know that? All of our podcasts are there. You can stream us without having to download us.
I'm going
to
be up front. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
I work here and I didn't know that. So yeah.
Give us reviews, share us with your friends, give us plays. All of that stuff matters. It helps keep us going, and we do appreciate it when you do. So I do want to thank you all for staying with us. Thank you all for staying with us through the conversation. We understand it is a difficult time. And this is definitely a very heavy topic that revolves around this character in the cinematic. And we just encourage you all to continue to be, well, yourselves, but also stay constructive and stay open-minded when you deal with other people. But without no further ado, we'll see you guys next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.